Today on the Hockey News pregame show, the Pittsburgh Penguins are struggling. What's the future for them?
Minnesota's risky overtime gambit.
And we're joined by San Jose Sharks site editor Max Miller to break down the Thomas Hurdle trade.
I'm Ryan Kennedy.
And I'm Connor Somerville. And this is the Hockey News pregame show, brought to you by Upper Deck. Well, Ryan, Pittsburgh are not what they used to be.
No.
Definitely not. They acquired Erik Karlsson, which we thought would be a great acquisition and fit in really well with their timeline. He has fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Their timeline may have passed, though. What's the path forward for Pittsburgh? Because they don't have a ton of assets, and they'll have to make moves. They have to make moves.
Yeah, and... again, like, they weren't a playoff team last year. I've been bearish on the Penguins for a couple of years now because they really haven't been a playoff threat. Even when they made the postseason, they had been kind of an easy out in the first round. So you had this problem where you can't rebuild when you have Crosby and Malkin and, to a lesser extent, Letang, because you're never going to be a bottom team, right? You're never going to bottom out. So they tried to forge ahead, and that to me, like, I don't know if there was an easy solution other than, you know, whichever GM it was at the time, now it's Kyle Dubas, saying to Crosby and Malkin, like, look, we need to take a year or two off. And sorry, you know, you guys are legends, you are multiple cup winners, but there's no sustainable path forward right now having a roster dotted with a bunch of 30-year-olds, some of whom are in their late 30s right now. So something interesting that I was thinking about the other day is if you look at the Erik Karlsson trade, the first rounder that Pittsburgh has to give to San Jose is top 10 protected.
Oh.
Yeah. So if the Penguins finish with a top 10 pick this year, that first rounder slides to 2025.
Interesting.
So, and I know there's a lot of people out there.
Don't say it.
Yeah, a lot of people in Philly, a lot of people in the tri-state area. There is a possibility that Pittsburgh could get Macklin Celebrini with the number one pick overall.
No.
Because right now, they are bottom 10 in the standings, and they could move up enough spots. Like, they're in that range. If that happens, then... and it's, you know, it's a slight chance. They're obviously not like Anaheim or San Jose.
It's low probability.
It's low probability, but we have seen stranger things happen, which is why they changed the rules. But it could happen. And if that happens, I still think you should move out some of your veteran contracts. You got a lot of guys on no trade clauses, but some of them are modified. They're like eight teams on the list. So, you know, I look at like Anola Chari as somebody who would be excellent on a Stanley Cup contender. And again, he's 32 right now. He's got a couple more years on his contract. It's a low-cost contract, but whatever. Ricard Raquel, you got it. I don't know who would take on that contract at this point because
it's
$5 million for a long time. But, you know, whatever. Maybe you have to give up a pick or something like that. Just a clear space. Jeff Carter's a UFA this summer.
Yeah,
I don't think you can re-sign Jeff Carter. It's nothing against him, but like you need that slot for a young player, and they don't have a lot of young players coming up. But if you get Max Celebrini,
that's the ideal third line center, but probably unrealistic. Another name I look at is Riley Smith.
Totally,
could you move him?
Mm-hmm.
Their back end is fairly solid. You know, you look at Marcus Patterson, that's a guy you could potentially look at moving. Ryan Graves as well.
Ryan Graves is interesting because he hasn't really worked out in Pittsburgh, but he was fantastic in other locales. So I could see that. And unfortunately, like the decor, it's not as gummed up as the forwards, but it gives you some cap space. It gives a roster spot to potentially younger players. So, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
The other name I thought of, because he's actually worked out fairly well in Pittsburgh, is Lars Eller.
Mm-hmm.
That's a serviceable third-line center on a pretty decent contract. I think he's only making 2.45 per season for next season as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guy I think you could look at and say, maybe there's a path forward to finding some sort of trade where you get younger but sort of still bring in a potential third-line center?
Yeah, and I think if Pittsburgh wants to do, like, the sort of reset as opposed to the rebuild, and again, if you have Crosby and Malkin, it's never going to be a dire situation, which kind of works against your own interests in a rebuild. But if you can do that thing where you trade away veterans and you're getting prospects that are, like, just on the cusp, so, like, on your team, in your pipeline, they could play right away, right? And, you know, Pittsburgh, I think in the Jake Guentzel trade, you know, Vasily Ponomarev, that's a guy that maybe he's only a bottom six forward for you, but he could probably play games now. He could certainly get a shot at the roster, you know, in the fall. That's the sort of player that I think you need to start working into the lineup. And like Samuel Poulin, obviously he's had a lot of ups and downs and adversity in his career so far, but that's one of your only sort of remaining prospects from, you know, past drafts and certainly the first round, where you say, okay, well, we got to give him one more shot and give him good runway to see if he takes.
Yeah, I think you also, like, you know, acquiring prospects may not be easy or a solution. Even looking at sort of a young player who has yet to break through.
True.
I think that could be a better solution for the Penguins because those are sort of the lower value assets that I think you could get for someone like a Lars Eller or a Riley Smith or unlikely Ricard Raquel unless you include a pick with him. You know, they tried it with Jansen Harkins. Didn't really work out. He hasn't been a great fit.
Then he got hurt, which is always unfortunate.
Yeah, but somebody like that. You know, maybe an AHL, NHL tweener who you can bring in and help bolster your bottom six or potentially help fit in on a top six role because those are the only wingers that they've ever acquired.
Right, like a Grigory Denisenko is a name that comes to mind for me where it was like a player that's got some pedigree that just hasn't quite found his spot in the NHL right now. So, yeah, I think that's totally valid. And, again, like, what do the Pittsburgh Penguins look like a year or two from now? At what point do Crosby and Malkin decide to hang them up? I mean, they both love the game, and you're never going to kick them out of town.
No.
But you do have to accept that eventually they're not going to be in your lineup, and what are you going to be once they're gone?
Yeah. Let's sort of switch gears to another metropolitan team. The New York Islanders are rolling.
Yeah.
They are hot right now. Patrick Waugh has come in and has unleashed a beast in Matthew Barzal. Noah Dobson has continued his excellent, excellent season. Could you see them making a run in this postseason? Because they're the kind of team who could make a run with a very hot goaltender and a lot of depth.
And a lot of structure, too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's always been solid about the Islanders. And, you know, it's funny talking about the Penguins. It was the Islanders that kept knocking them out of the playoffs when they were making it. Yeah, it's funny because, like, recently the offense has been great for the Islanders. Defense, too. I mean, they've had a significant amount, you know, like 7-2 over the Sharks, 6-1 over the Ducks. You know, they just lost against the Kings, but whatever. You can't win them all. 5-1 over the Bruins not that long ago.
That's the most impressive of the three.
Exactly. So, I mean, for the Islanders, they needed a bunch of wins. Their schedule was, like, a little bit soft there. They had the Blues, Sharks, Ducks all in a row. They won all those games. That's what they had to do. Now they're in a wild card spot. You know, they get the Sabres and Senators with their next two games. Those are, like, must-win games for them.
Yes.
But they're in a great position. And
they are.
It's a great point. You know, Patrick Waugh, he was the breath of fresh air they needed. You know, he made some tweaks. And, you know, we always knew Barzal could be an offensive dynamo. I remember, like, he said it himself in interviews. I remember at the summer player showcase. He was like, yeah, I could, you know, be that guy that kind of cheats out of the zone and gets more opportunities. But we like to play on the right side of the puck. So he was always adhering to the system. Now, I mean, he's still part of the system, but in Patrick Waugh's system, it allows for a little more of Barzal to excel, and New York, all of a sudden, is really kind of threatening there. And yeah, that's a team that you do not want to face in the first round.
No.
Especially if you know, you win your division, and that's the wild card team. You're like, really? Like,
yeah.
We got to face Sorokin, and we got to face, you know, this team that...
A heavy team.
A heavy team that's, like, built for the playoffs, and all of a sudden Barzal's hot, and Dobson is... I think he'll get some down-ballot Norris consideration. You know, he's not the favorite, but...
No.
You got to give that kid some props.
100%. Yeah. And I think a risk-taker head coach has been a big... boost, and we'll dive into more risk-taker head coaches after the break with the Minnesota Wild.
Hi, I'm Michael Trakos, Director of Digital Media, and check out my weekday column called The Morning Take, where I break down the NHL's hottest topics every morning, Monday to Friday, at thehockeynews.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. And Connor, we had some excitement this week. The Minnesota Wild and coach John Hines, they pulled their goalie in overtime. It was 3-on-3. It made it 4-on-3 against Nashville, and they scored. Minnesota desperately needed that extra point, but it came with some risk because if you get scored on in that scenario, you don't get the loser point. So this was a big gamble by John Hines. It paid off. He was very specific about when the goalie was pulled. Obviously, they wanted to have, you know, full possession. It was also noted that he made sure that Nashville's best players weren't on the ice when they did this. So, do we like this risk?
Look, they're at a point now where they have to win. They have to win. There's no question about that. And regulation, I think, is more important than getting a shootout win, where it's probably more of a 50-50. So I don't hate it. There's, as you said, a ton of risk involved. And I think that has to be heavily measured. You know, I don't think we're going to be seeing teams do this every single night.
Right.
But, you know, if you need to win a game, it's not a bad idea.
If you need that point. And it's funny because I know that... St. Louis Blues interim coach Drew Bannister was asked about this because the Blues are very much in the same position as Minnesota, where it's like playoff hopes are like dying, almost dead. They're on the embers, but mathematically they're still in it. And he was saying, well, I probably wouldn't do it right away, but if we get to a scenario where we need 10 points and we only got five games left, then I might think about it. The trailblazer on this, and I thought about this after it happened, Sergei Fedorov, as a coach in the KHL, started doing this a couple of years ago and had, I think, some pretty good results there. So it's not without precedent. It has happened before, but it is pretty rare. But I thought that was super interesting for John Hines to try out and just have the wherewithal to know the ins and outs of not only, you know, the stakes, but also to say, okay, well, we're not doing it right off the hop. Like, we're going to do this at a very specific time. And it's kind of funny because I know some of Minnesota's players, I think Matt Boldy specifically was asked after the game. He was like, I had no idea what the rule was that we would have, like, lost the points. So sometimes it's better to just let the players play and not worry about the consequences.
Yeah, it was. It's a big risk, I think. Like, it's not going to happen probably again this season, if we're being realistic.
Right. I'd love to see it, but like last game of the season, if somebody needs like 1 point.
Maybe.
You never know.
Maybe. Yeah. I still find it highly unlikely.
That's fair.
And I also, like, I feel like people sort of thought it was a short term of, oh, we need this point, let's do it. This has to be thought of.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's analytics involved, and there's a whole bunch of other things
that have gone
into this decision. So not every coach or not every organization would take this risk.
Right.
And I respect the Wild for willing to do it.
Yes.
Because how many other teams would say, yeah, pull your goalie in overtime. If we don't get the point, we don't get the point.
Yeah, yeah. No, I loved it. I thought it was a great risk. And it's funny because, like, I'm sort of the mind, this is sort of like opposite, but if you're down a goal and you have a power play, I know a lot of teams will pull the goalie to go 6-on-4. I hate that. Because if you are the penalty killer, all of a sudden you can ice the puck with a plum because there's no icing on a penalty. And they can just shoot at the open net, you know, as they will. So I don't like that. I know the analytics, I think, say you should do that, but I hate the risk because then it's like game over and you don't have, and like trust your power play. You have a power play.
I agree with that. I don't think you should ever pull your goalie on the power play. I find the risk is too high. And as you said, the guys are so good at this point, they'll just dump the puck down the ice and 9 times out of 10 it'll go in.
Exactly. And how often do you even practice 6-on-4 in practice?
Exactly.
Right?
So, never.
Anyways, well, another coach whose tactics are in the news, John Tortorella in Philadelphia, suspended 2 games, so he'll miss games against the Sharks and the Maple Leafs.
Yep.
And he was fined for refusing to leave the bench after he got tossed. Now, the Flyers, right to the tippy top, backed him up on this decision. And, of course, him yelling at the ref went viral all
over
social
media. It always does.
It always does. But did Torts go too far this time?
No, well, okay. We can't really say that because we don't know what he said.
Right.
We don't know definitively what he said.
We can read lips.
We can read lips, but
we know some of what he said.
We know some of what he said. It's hard to say if he's gone too far without knowing exactly what he said.
Uh-huh.
And from the sounds of it, it doesn't sound like he did go way too far, because if he did, I assume the suspension would have been even longer.
Right.
And this was more based on the fact that he was refusing to leave the bench.
That's more the part that I'm getting at here. Like, after you get booted, whether or not it was justified, him showing up the ref and being like, no, I'm not leaving.
That was, that was not a good look at all.
That's the part that, would concern me. And obviously it concerned the NHL because they suspended him 2 games for it.
And you didn't even mention the fine amount, because it's not insignificant. $50,000.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money.
Yep, that's like
and that's
2 Connor Bedard cards.
almost.
Yeah.
Torts is just Torts.
It's true. And for the most part this year, it's been a great thing for the Flyers. And you know, it's funny, in a weird way, even this is good for the Flyers because, again, it shows that their coach has their back.
Yep.
And that he's going to fight for them at every opportunity. Now, if they drop both of those games, and they should beat San Jose, because the Sharks, obviously a rebuild team, one of the worst in the NHL right now, they should beat the Sharks. The Leafs, on paper, they shouldn't beat, but they need to, because, I mean, you know, we talked about it earlier in the show. The Islanders are on a tear. And right now, Philly is still in third place, but might not be for long. And then you get into really murky territory, because the Flyers have been such a good story all year. If they miss the playoffs, man, that would be a bummer. And hey,
it would be tough.
House money, they're playing important games in March. They will be playing important games in early April. Whether they get to play the best games remains to be seen. But it's going to be very interesting to see how they react in those 2 games where Torts is not behind the bench.
Yeah, it's going to be a big test. You know, as you said, this team is not a team that's expected to do much in the playoffs, putting it kindly.
Yep.
And if they don't make the playoffs, it probably isn't the end of the world because they want the good draft picks.
Very true.
So, it sucks in the short term. Long term, maybe for the best, especially because you got to look at your assistant coach and whether or not he's a potential head coach.
There you go. Well, a team that we know is going to have a high draft pick is the San Jose Sharks.
Yes.
And after the break, we got Max Miller, our San Jose team site editor, to talk about all things Finn. So stick with us. Hey there, this is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, and Future Watch is out now. Our annual look at NHL prospect pipelines. We have our cover story, the St. Louis Blues, and we rank the top 100 drafted prospects in hockey. So check it out now, thn.com/free or in your mailbox.
Welcome back to the Hockey News Pregame Show. We are now joined by our San Jose Sharks site editor, Max Miller. Max, why? Why did the San Jose Sharks trade Thomas Hertl, especially for a return that seemed so bad?
Yeah, on paper, it doesn't look the best. First of all, thanks, guys, for having me on. I really appreciate it. But as for the why, well, if you look at Mike Greer's plan of action. He wanted to get rid of every bad contract that had more than 3 years remaining on it. Brent Burns, goodbye. Erik Karlsson, goodbye. And now Tomas Hertl, goodbye. Now, I myself am I'm okay with the return. He basically got two first-round picks. David Enstrom obviously is a prospect, but you can look at it as a first-round pick. You know, I'm not a huge fan of him giving up two-thirds in the pick, but that also caused it only to be 17% retention. So, you know, I think it's pretty darn surprising, the trade. It caught me off guard. It caught the rest of the San Jose media off guard. But clearly, Mike Greer, his plan of action through the start of it was get rid of the bad contracts and go from there.
Well, that's very interesting, Max, because I think from an outsider's perspective, we looked at this as, you know, Vegas reaching out to get Tomas Hertl. But it almost feels like for Mike Greer, it was a case of how do I get rid of Hertl's contract? So am I right in assuming that this is a very long-term plan by Mike Greer to make sure that he has maximum cap space and that this is like literally tearing it down to the studs?
Yeah, you know, I'd say you're correct in that. I mean, every time we've talked to Mike, he's talked about, you know, how that he'll, you know, whether it was after Erik Karlsson or after the trade deadline in general, right? He gives himself financial flexibility. It's clearly been the biggest thing for him. And if you look at, you know, Tomas Hertl, when he signed that contract, that was, you know, Doug Wilson was away from the team. Joe Will was the interim GM. That was kind of the final move of the Doug Wilson era. And you look at the contracts that were handed out. Logan Couture was in his 30s when he got the deal. Tomas Hertl would be, you know, he's 30 years old. He's got 6 years left. He'll be 36. Brent Burns, his contract ends when he's 40. Erik Karlsson ends when he's 39. Like, all these Doug Wilson moves, like, you just put off the rebuild. And, well, I do think it's a little bit too much of a teardown. Same time, I mean, you look at their draft capital. I mean, he's got two first-round picks last year. He hopefully was going to have two first-round picks this year, but I don't think the Devils are making the conference finals. And then he's got two first-round picks in 2024, and he's got two first-round picks in 2025 now. I mean, he's going all out to have two first-round picks and ultimate financial flexibility. And, it's hard to see because the Sharks were so good for so long, and fans here and everybody here is caught off by surprise. And you know, I think it's, you know, me personally, just being here my whole life and watching the Sharks my whole life, you know, before I even start covering them, it's strange to see. But you when you start looking into it, you could start to see where Mike Greer's plan is coming to place with the contracts that he has from the UFAs. Start running out after 2 to 3 years, and you see where he hopefully can build it down. Now, developmental-wise, losing sucks, and it's happening in both the NHL and AHL levels. So that's my one concern with it, is they're not winning on any level. So who knows what's going to happen with their AHL affiliate next season.
So you mentioned Logan Couture. He has not played this season. What is going on with him? Is he going to come back at all?
Yeah, he's had a rough go. Just 6 games this year. Osteus pubis is the injury. It's a deep groin issue, basically. From what we've heard from one of the Sharks broadcasters who's dealt with himself, it's Drew Amenda. Basically, your groin comes out of alignment and it throws off your groin, your hip, your back, and it's hard because there's no surgery. He told us himself, you know, we did speak to him after Tomas Hertl was traded. The Sharks PR staff was kind enough to get him and Marko Dvorlasek on Zoom, so we were able to get an update from Logan. And he did say he won't play this season. Now, the other thing is, he's mentioned a couple times this year when we spoke to him, is like, he's fearful of his career. You know, the Sharks and David Quinn are optimistic that he'll be ready to go for next season. There's no surgery available for this injury. He himself and the Sharks training staff have said that, you know, it's just a rest and recovery. Some days he's, you know, it feels good. He can work out. Some days he can't even get out of bed. There's really, you know, it's when this is a day by day, or, you know, it's not day to day, it's a day by day situation. It truly is a day by day situation. And, you know, there was frustration from our part in the media where we were like, okay, what's going on here? We have no idea. And when he finally told us, it all made sense. He once again said that he's pretty fearful of his career. You know, he's got a few years left on his contract, making $8 million. I mean, the quotes came out yesterday. That he said during that interview after Tomas Hertl was traded, he's like, who's going to trade for a guy who's 35 and making $8 million, right? Like, he's not wrong. And they played 6 games this year. He's not wrong. So Logan Couture's focus isn't on winning a cup like Tomas Hertl's is. It's on, you know, it's on getting back on the ice and being able to have a daily life. So he even said he's focused on just having a regular life again. So I don't know. He's done this season. We'll see where he's at next season. But this is a strange situation and something that you just can't, you know, be like, oh, he can go into the knife and fix it. This is something where it really could just plague him for the rest of his life after hockey too.
Terrible to hear because Logan Couture has always been a pretty stand-up guy anytime I've talked to him. But looking at the here and now, obviously, you know, San Jose has had some kids get opportunities with the big club this season, and that's obviously going to be the focus moving ahead. Thomas Bortolo seems to be off to a good start in that regard. What have you seen from Bortolo?
Yeah, Bort's a good kid. He's been up and down. He's played wing. He's played center. He's played wing. He's played center. Now he's back on the wing again. This call-up, he looks different. You know, he's had a few cups of coffee in the NHL before. I think they finally gave him some direction. The start of the season, he was in the NHL, played six games, and was playing center. And they wanted to give him one last opportunity to see if he could be an NHL center with that Logan Couture injury. And just wasn't working out. So they sent him back down. He was hurt in the minor leagues for a little bit. And then they've committed to him being on the wing. And the last 2 months in the AHL with the San Jose Barracuda, he really picked up. He had 25 points in 35 games, and he was really starting to play well the last 20 games or so. And now called up, obviously, 3 goals in 2 games, all on the power play, but he's playing on the top unit. Mikael Granlund's feeding him pucks right in the middle of the slot, and he's scoring them. So the biggest thing for me with him is just his defensive coverage. I think that's always been his issue, you know, adjusting it to a wing, similar to Alexi Lafreniere, maybe not obviously as high of a talent level as Alexi Lafreniere of the New York Rangers, but he's got hands, he's quick, he's motivated, and I think now that he has some direction of what position he's going to be playing, you could see that development that the Sharks franchise has been wanting, and it's good to see because he works his butt off.
Final question before we let you go. Kevin LeBanc, expiring UFA, as is Alex Barabanov and a number of other San Jose Sharks. Do you see them trying to keep anybody from this roster who's on an expiring contract, or are they just going to clear house this summer?
I think they might be able to keep a couple. I know for me and the knowledge I've learned from sources, LeBanc won't be a Shark next year, and that's not even from the Shark side. That's from both sides. They are so unhappy with that situation. They are – it's just – that's a marriage that has ended sour, and – Kevin LeBanc, I can confirm with you, will not be on the Sharks next season. He does not want to re-sign there unless he gets paid a bag. Obviously, things change. But Barabanov, I think, you know, they said things could change. I think Barabanov wants to win. When we asked him right before the deadline on Thursday morning before he was scratched, we asked him straight up, do you miss winning? And right away, obviously, a Russian player, his English is not the best, but he understood that. He went, whew, so much. I mean, it was a genuine reaction. Like, you're like, oh, yeah, he misses winning. So we'll see what happens. I think they might keep a couple. But of those two that you mentioned, LeBanc, I know, doesn't want to re-sign. And David Quinn and him don't agree with some of the stuff on the ice, just the way it's played. Similar to a John Tortorella, Kevin Hayes situation. No ill will towards the player in terms of, you know, they're cordial. You don't see any animosity toward each other off the ice, and they just see different eye to eye in styles of hockey. But Barabanov, I think, could resign, but you know, he's had a tough season and he's going to want a lot more money because of his history. He's had success and he wants to win. So I think they're going to bring in a couple more things. Who knows if they make a trade, what happens? Cause now it's kind of like, okay, well, what do you got left? So now I think it's time we start seeing, you know, obviously Will Smith could play the end of the season after he's done at BC. And then Quentin Musty and David Enstrom and all these guys, it's time to give the kids some run here.
Well, Max, thank you for joining us. Make sure to check out his content on the Hockey News' San Jose Sharks website, and we will be back after the break.
Hey there, everybody. This is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, and I have a new web column, Future Watch Weekly, that you should keep an eye out for. Every week, I look at the developmental world of hockey from NCAA, Major Junior, all points in between. So check it out every Friday morning at THN.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show brought to you by Upper Deck. And speaking of which, Series 2 is here, and we are all very excited. We are joined by Jared Ostroff of the Hockey News, digital media manager. If that's, am I correct there? I never remember the titles. Nah. Something like that.
You missed a promotion or two.
All right, fair enough. Vice President of Hockey Cards. Anyways, we have a box of Series 2. Everybody's looking for the Connor Bedard special cards. And we're just going to bust open all these packs, and hopefully one of us will become a millionaire.
Yeah.
Because
fingers
you
crossed.
Have, yeah, exactly. You have the Young Gun cards, the one of ones. Gentlemen, grab some cards, let's open them up, and then Jared, maybe just let's start off talking about that already iconic card that everyone is looking for.
Well, I think the first thing I would say is I haven't seen as much hype around an Upper Deck product or any sports collectible product like this since probably 15-16, where you had Connor McDavid in Series 1, you also had Patrick Laine, and people were flocking to the stores, but this is unmatched, unparalleled. So they've shifted down to only 12 packs a box, mm-hmm. but you're getting 12 cards. So I was saying before, you could get about 9 base cards. You want to slot those into your binder.
Right.
And then everything else we're gunning for are the parallels. So these year's editions, they're shiny, they're cool, they're nice, but you want to try to combine. You want a Young Gun parallel.
Right.
Like the Connor Bedard Red Outburst one, I think it is, out of 25 is selling for $10,000 on eBay. You've got the Golden one of one selling, or with the bounty on it, for $1 million. Did you just find
what
the
What
do you one? Got? Connor Bedard.
You got young a Connor Bedard.
An Outburst one.
A Young Guns Outburst.
Wow. So what do we have here?
We need to stop the stream and literally go house hunting. I'm going to, you know what? It's a shame I put my phone over to the side, because I'm very tempted to go on eBay and check out what this bad boy's worth.
Wow.
So why don't you do that, and I'll start talking about... So the thing with the parallels is you could get one that's one out of every 4 boxes, one out of every 6 boxes.
Uh-huh.
I believe this is something that they refer to more as a case hit.
Okay.
So you could be buying 12 boxes with your 12 packs in it. You could go 11 straight boxes, and I'll find a single Connor Bedard. Finding a Connor Bedard Young Gun is amazing in itself. Finding a variation of it, and like I said before, I was hoping for a 1 out of 25. I can't remember if these are more rare.
I don't think there's a name on it or a numbering.
No, because you know that you can get one of those per box, because they also have a program where you can get a black of white canvas card, or you can get
right.
a clear cut. So I was kind of hoping maybe we could get a clear cut Bedard, but would that take you? One pack?
One pack.
First pack, he gets a Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
I haven't even looked at my card.
What's it called again?
I believe that's the Outburst one.
Outburst.
Wow.
I believe that's the insert that you get one card of.
And there are some pretty fun, like, we've seen these portrait ones before. It's funny, I have 2 packs. I have special Tage Thompson cards in both of them. But we got this, like, Alexander Georgiev instinctive.
Right.
That's kind of
the instinctive cards look awesome.
They do.
Really cool insert, but you're going to find a bunch of those. I think it's about
right.
3 or 4 a box. Deep Roots, you're getting one of.
Okay, I got a Dylan Larkin Deep Roots in my first pack.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah.
And you got
I believe these are going for $30. Oh, here's one for $80.
Okay.
Canadian.
Not bad, not bad.
$80.
So don't quit your day
Here
job
we go.
Yet.
No,
not
so
quite.
I think we got a little too excited. Still, getting
it's
a Connor Bedard.
Exciting.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that that's selling for less than the true Young Gun? Like just the
According
the
to eBay.
One? Wow. Yeah. I guess it's a bit...
The market has to catch up,
yeah.
right?
I also got a Matthew Olivier card.
It's so, and Jared, it's really interesting. I mean, I know we've talked about this before, where there's kind of 2 ways of collecting these days, where you know you can go for the special cards and try to hit like one of those you know Outburst ones, those one of ones, whatever it is, or you can try to get the whole set. And you know, when I was a kid, that was kind of the name of the game, but it. Where it's like, I want the whole thing. And you would even go to stores and buy, you know, what at the time were called, like, commons, where it was, players that were just, like,
these are your commons right
here. Your third or fourth liners, where it's like, I'm still missing 2 guys from the St. Louis Blues, or I'm still missing a guy from the Rangers. But it's interesting how opening packs now, because you got these special cards, you know, you're looking for...
a Jared McCann ecliptic. I don't even know what that means.
It's one of the newer additions to the series, but
Canvas Evan Bouchard.
Awesome. So basically what you were saying is kind of how series 1 and 2 used to be, which would be you want to finish that set, you want to look for your young guns, you know, you're getting 6 in a box.
A Jackson Lacombe young gun.
Yeah, I think this is the lovely marriage of those two.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you've got enough cards here to satisfy that collecting, the pack ripping. And on the other hand, when you're going after the Bedards, hopefully you'll get a slightly more valuable one than we got, but we hold on to that,
right.
And that could rise up to the level of the Connor McDavid cards now, which you see some for thousands, so.
Wow, and I got a canvas as well. Barabanov, who we were just talking about. With Max Miller, so that works out well.
Got the new director of the boards insert, another UD canvas. Feeds, you'll grab a couple in a box where we got Cole McWard, excellent name on the Vancouver Canucks.
Wow. My last pack, because this is my fourth pack that I'm opening here.
Well, I'm just sad that, I mean, technically we could get more than one Bedard, but
You
should have waited until the end.
Statistically.
It's my fault.
Ooh, this is an interesting. Elias Pettersson, glaring.
Yep.
Wow. Tage Thompson, ecliptic.
So now you see what I mean in terms of like.
Oh, young gun Pavel Minchikov.
Ooh, very
nice.
That's
pretty good.
That's pretty nice. I feel like I have to open all these packs.
Apparently, yeah, you're on a tear there.
UD Camp.
The new Dazzlers.
I'm curious too, and Jared, you might have some insight on this. Like, obviously, Bedard is kind of the Holy Grail young gun, but, you know, like Minchikov having a pretty great season with Anaheim, maybe a bit surprising that he's been so good so quickly. Does that factor into things, or is it more like you want, like I know with Series 1, Matthew Nyes, Toronto Maple Leafs, obviously a huge fan base. That was one of the big cards that people wanted. So is it merit-based, or is it more kind of just like if you're on a popular team, if you have that sort of name recognition for the young guns specifically, is that more of a factor in how much people want them?
I would say typically this year's a bit of a different beast. This might be the most printed Upper Deck series or brand of cards in the history of Upper Deck. There could be 100,000 Connor Bedard young guns. It doesn't mean that your value is necessarily going to skyrocket. We know the demand's there. Uh-huh. But that's why you're looking for the combination of the young gun you want with maybe some kind of parallel to it. So like I said, obviously everyone wants a 1 out of 25 Connor Bedard, but someone, for example, like Zach Benson on the Sabres, everyone thinks he's going to be, has a bright future ahead of him, but I think based on the hype around Bedard, his card's going for $25, $50 on eBay, whereas the Bedards, except for the one we have, seem to be all over $100, some over $1,000, and one that's $1 million.
There you go. Okay, there's one more pack left.
That's you.
Okay, well, I got my Arbor Jacki.
Nice.
So I got another Young Guns here, not Alexei Lafreniere, but a guy who's been chipping in nice for the Kings this year.
Very solid, very solid prospect.
Okay, we got one more pack.
All right.
Feels heavy.
There you go.
William Nylander in a St. Pat's jersey.
But also shows
maybe
because...
Maybe teasing a little rapid fire there.
Yes, indeed.
Because there's so many inserts this year, it could be also great instead of buying a box, you know, the box... Boxes are really popular right now, and the price reflects that. But if you're, you know, in the checkout aisle and you see one pack, you know you're going to get some fun base cards to flip through. You're going to get multiple inserts. So, last one here with some emphasis.
Indeed.
Ooh, really so special. There's an entire insert series in this product that is just around Connor McDavid. So I believe there's 82 different ones, and each one highlights a different. Oh, you got one too.
You got one, Leon Draisaitl and here's Connor another, McDavid.
Yeah. And here's another deep root. So I saw there's one with
Anze Kopitar. Well.
It kind of shows those are more your veteran kind of parallels. But this is a fun product. And another Young Guns for expert.
John Ludvig. I'm pretty sure I got into a fight the other night and won handily, so good for him.
There you go.
Right. So, this is a really fun product, and like I said, there's a tremendous amount of hype around it, and that's because you got a generational talent, but you've also got a lot of fun along the way.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for that, Jared. And after the break, we're going to have some more fun with Rapid Fire.
All Hi, I'm Michael Trakos, Director of Digital Media, and check out my weekday column called The Morning Take, where I break down the NHL's hottest topics every morning, Monday to Friday, at thehockeynews.com.
Okay, everybody. We did it. We pulled a Connor Bedard outburst young guns. So let's talk about that. What do you do if you find a Connor Bedard rookie card? Well, step one is you want to find out how valuable your card is. So if you're like us, you'll hop over to eBay or one of the third-party sites, there's a bunch of them, or pull out your Beckett guide and try to look up what the card is worth. So you have some buyer beware stuff. If you go on eBay and the first couple of results are saying that a card is worth $20, $30, and then the next ones are saying it's worth over a couple thousand dollars, you gotta kind of look through the details and see what's up. So when we looked at the card at first, the first five or six results on eBay showed a mystery pack option, which would be if you want a 1 out of 100 chance of getting your Connor Bedard. So make sure you do your research before you click that buy button or sell button, because there's a lot of scam artists out there. One of the other things and more safer routes you can do is take your card to a card store or a card show. You've got the Convention Center card show that appears twice a year in Toronto. It hits the road and goes all across Canada. There's monthly card shows where you can go and talk to the experts at the booth. But I think the very first step is you need to protect the card. If the card is going to be worth something in the future, it's got to stay mint condition. So we're talking about sleeves, we're talking about hard cases. So the first thing we're going to do when we get this bad boy out of the office is we're going to head over, make sure it's in a one touch, take care of it, and then maybe submit it in for grading. A card like this might be $2,000 ungraded, could be worth twice as much if you get an 8.5 or higher on Beckett or PSA. So if you're new to card collecting and you've pulled your first Connor Bedard, don't panic. This is good news. This is an outburst Connor Bedard that we've got over here. Unfortunately, we didn't get the red out of 25, which is selling for about $10,000, or the gold, which of course has the $1 million bounty. So have fun out there, but most importantly, when you find a good card, take care of it.
Ryan, it is the time of firing rapidly. However,
yes,
I am not doing it.
That's right.
We have Jared.
Yes. Off camera.
Off camera.
Ready
Jared,
to fire.
You were just with us for the segment where I thought I only pulled a $20 Connor Bedard card, which is actually worth like $1,500.
Just add a couple zeros at the end. Are you guys ready for question one?
Let's do it.
Give us question one.
Should Matt Rempe receive a suspension for his elbow on Jonas Siegenthaler last night? And if so, how many games should he receive if you think he should? And note, it was a phone hearing.
Yes. Okay, so I think he will be suspended. Yes, Matt Rempe is a big guy, but his arm was definitely not down. The elbow came up at the most inopportune time. So I think he gets, I'm going to say 2 games. Yeah, I'm going to go 2 at this point.
You stole my answer. I extended elbow. It was not a good hit. No. It's the second time he's done it in the last 2 weeks. He probably could have gotten something the last time as well, at least a fine.
Yeah.
I'm guessing 2 games. Knowing player safety, I could easily see it being 1. It probably should be 2 or 3, though.
Fair.
Jared, what's next?
What are your thoughts on the Toronto Maple Leafs' latest St. Pat's jerseys?
I like them a lot. I know they had a previous St. Pat's jersey that I feel was marred by the striping, where it made the numbers look all weird. Yeah, so this one, I like the shamrock itself, and I like that it's a lot simpler, and you can read everything properly.
Interesting. I like the old ones better.
Oh, okay.
I think I like the giant clover, and I thought, or the writing, not the giant clover. I found the writing is a weird spot on the clover. So, not a huge fan, but it's a specialty jersey.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah. Next.
The Detroit Red Wings have quietly lost 5 in a row and now find themselves outside of a wild card spot. Should the fans be worried?
Yes, they should be very worried because I'm pretty sure this losing streak has coincided with Dylan Larkin being out of the lineup.
Yes.
And he's continually going to be out of the lineup for at least another week or so, I would think, right? So again, with the Islanders surging, you got a problem on your hands. Like Detroit, like yes. At one point it looked like five teams were going to get in from the Atlantic. That's not happening anymore. It's four at the most, and Tampa Bay's in the driver's seat right now for that fourth spot. So yeah, I would be very concerned if I was a Red Wings fan.
Yes, it's more concerning, I think, how streaky they have been. Hot 1 second, extremely cold the next. I think they should be worried. You know, there are a fair few. I think they'll be in the wild card conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be one spot out.
They could lose by like a point. That kind of scenario, yeah.
I think that's the likely outcome come the end of the season.
There you go.
Next question.
Which injury loss over the weekend will have a bigger impact on their team? Aaron Ekblad and the Florida Panthers or Jacob Trouba and the Rangers?
I'm going to go Jacob Trouba and the Rangers. Not that they're in any danger of falling out of the playoffs or anything like that, but I think it'll make a bigger impact because we've seen Florida excel without Aaron Ekblad at the very beginning of the season when we thought they were going to falter. So obviously he's very important for them, but at the same time, this Panthers team has proven that they can win basically with any of their players in or out of the lineup. So I have more confidence in Florida to navigate this troublesome spot.
I'm going to pull Michael Tricos and pull the heel, and I will say Aaron Ekblad because Boston are right in a tight, tight race with Florida for the top of their division. They likely don't want to face Toronto in the first round. We'd like to get one of the wild card spots. So I think that will have a bigger impact on them as their games are more important.
Gotcha. All right. Final question. What do you got, Jared?
Josh Norris is reportedly out for the season after having shoulder surgery. Who steps up for the Senators in his absence?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is Shane Pinto's time.
Yes.
And, you know, unfortunately, obviously he had that suspension that took up the first half of his season. But, okay, yeah, it's a lost season in Ottawa once again. But for Shane Pinto, who's still a young player, still technically developing, really, this is a great opportunity for him to step up and just eat minutes, you know, play with some skilled guys. And then honorable mention, I'll say Ridly Greig as well, just in terms of him getting a chance. Maybe we see more minutes for him down the middle.
I would say, and I'm going to go off the board a little bit,
okay,
Drake Batherson.
Oh, all right.
I think he's been sort of quiet this season, and I think he needs to step up a little bit, especially if Ottawa want to contend in the future. They need him to be a guy, and he's been a fine top six option, but he needs to be a good top six option. So I will say Drake Batherson.
All right, cool.
All right, that's it. Rapid fire. Jared, thank you for taking my spot. We'll be back on Saturday for another episode of the Hockey News Pregame Show. That is sponsored today by Upper Deck. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you next time.